Welcome to Mula Matters with Ina. It can still be a challenge for many South African families to talk about wealth and securing it across generations. International research suggests that family wealth rarely lasts more than three generations for the simple reason that families do not talk about money or inheritance and do not create a family roadmap to protect intergenerational wealth. Creating wealth for the next generation will make their lives so much easier, especially in a world where everything is expensive. Imagine being able to leave enough money for the next generation to enable them to study further or pay towards a family home. You will not only leave a legacy behind as a family member who cared for the young ones, but also give them a leg up to get further in life. Research indicates that core beliefs about money and wealth are instilled in children before the age of seven. If they develop a positive relationship with money management, it'll play a pivotal role in shaping their lives. Today, we chat to Daryl Coker, advisory partner at Citadel, about how to have these conversations that can be life-changing for the new generation. Welcome, Daryl.
Thank you, Ina. Good to be here.
Tell me, why is it important to have this kind of conversation?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because this is a skill. Managing your own money is very much a skill that one doesn't get taught at any sort of formal institution level. So you can go through a whole 13 years, 12 years of schooling and never really understand the meaning of money. And so that then falls back onto the families who then need to actually pass that information and those skills across to the next generation.
Do you wish someone had this kind of discussion with you when you were young?
Absolutely. I mean, it's quite interesting. Our parents lived in a very, very strange time, and we'll touch on that a little bit later as well. But those conversations around money, around the dining room table. Somehow, and they were always negative. It's always you're always having that conversation when there's no money and people are stressed and anxious. But the irony is that if we had these conversations before you got to that level, it would be such a better and more positive outcome. And I think that's why people shy away from it so much is because it's always a negative conversation about not having enough, rather than a positive conversation around what are we going to do with our money.
How would you define true wealth?
Yeah, I mean that's great, and that's very, very different for lots of different people. I mean, true wealth is not only about having a vast amount of money. It's really more about the freedom to make choices that align with one's inspirations and their goals and what they're trying to achieve. In their lives. I've helped people retire that don't have a massive quantum of money, but yet really believe that they got true wealth for the standard of living that they're going to live. And on the flip side of that, we've helped people retire with lots of money, but never really find that true freedom that they're looking for.
What is the Great Wealth Transfer? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I said I'd get back to this, two questions ago or so. But I mean, the Great Wealth Transfer is really the passing of money between generations. Now, if we think of it, post 1945, and the global economic environment has actually created a lot of wealth for a lot of people. Yes, we've had a few recessions along the way. We've had the dot-com bubble that burst. We had the global financial crisis. And yes, this is where wealth was eroded. But in the main, if you looked at that, the ability of our parents to generate wealth after the Second World War was really huge. And the thing about that is that those people, a lot of them have made a lot more money than they can spend in their lifetime. So there's going to be a massive amount of money being passed down to the millennials and the Gen Xs in the future as inheritances, as they can't spend this money and therefore pass it along to the next generation. I mean, they're talking around in the US around approximately $84 trillion that'll be
That's a
passed from
lot.
one generation to another. Yeah, it's massive, massive.
How will life change then for the next generation?
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting one because you know the next generation, if they don't have the skills to accept that money and use it correctly, they will actually end up spending quite a lot of it quite quickly, and be in a situation, unfortunately, where they erode that wealth considerably over time. You know, if money's managed well, you know, that intergenerational transfer can last two, three, four, five generations, but it does take a conscious effort to do that. Now, if we don't pass on the skills to our younger generations, you know, the skills that we learned to create that wealth, they're merely just going to receive the money and then just go out and spend it. It's a very, very big generation of immediate gratification, and that can be very dangerous when dealing with money if they don't have the right skills to manage it.
And that is why it's important to prepare them for their great wealth transfer.
100%. I mean, it's really, really critical that people have these conversations on an ongoing basis to make sure that the receiving generation is actually well equipped and well skilled to make sure that they keep that wealth going. We've just seen from COVID and the knock on of COVID how, yes, we're going through a tough, you know, economic global economic environment at the moment, high inflation, et cetera. And you know, these younger people have never really experienced this. So yeah, it's a good learning experience at the moment for them.
Why is it important for children to understand the value of money early on?
Yeah, so I mean, as I mentioned briefly before, you know, what we've often found about economic conversations or money conversations around the dinner table is that it's never a positive experience, more of a, you know, negative connotation, and that forces people inwards and not to share information around money. But it's absolutely critical that we end up in a situation where, you know, we're able to help, you know, the young people. From a very, very early age, you know, start thinking about money, thinking about how they should, what they should do with their money, you know, basic concepts that they could actually touch on. So it's very, very important for us to start generating positive discussions with the young people from a very early age, because then once you've set the groundwork, the rest can become, you know, a lot easier and a lot more fun to deal with over time.
How important is it for children to work for their money by doing chores?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm a big advocate of that kind of thing. You know, the kind of old adage of easy come, easy go, I think is a skill that we don't really want to teach our children. You know, there needs to be some sort of, you know, in my opinion, work versus, you know, versus remuneration for that. And whether you go and say to your children, say, listen, you know, I'm going to pay you X amount per month to do your normal chores, but if you go above and beyond, you could potentially earn more. You know, just giving them a feel for nothing comes easy, you know. At the end of the day, a lot of our kids walk around our houses thinking the Wi-Fi is free, the electricity is free, the water's free, you know, purely because they just have never been exposed to the fact that, you know, those are bills that need to be paid. And in order to get those bills paid, you need to earn some sort of money. And the one way of doing that is to actually get out and, you know, get your head down and actually work.
How do we speak to children under 7 about money, and what should we tell them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great place to start. I mean, introducing basic concepts like different denominations of coins and notes, you know, also teaching them the difference between needs and wants. I think it's critical that you get that kind of philosophy across to them quite early on, because that sets a groundwork for, you know, for the primary school years and the teens. Because if they understand needs and wants, really, at the end of the day, they'll learn to save. Yeah, giving them chores around the house, as you've mentioned, is a great way to teach them a little bit more of, you know, working for something and becoming financially responsible. And also important there at that age, because they're in a more of a concrete operational kind of stage of their lives, it's very, very important there to pay them in physical sort of coins and money. So to kind of get a heavy piggy bank is better than a light piggy bank, you know. So it's critical at that age, because, you know, that's kind of what they're focusing on. And I know we've got modern day money all over the place. There's e-wallet and that kind of thing. But I think certainly for those younger kids, it's very, very important to make sure that they actually feel the money coming in and going out of their wallets.
And in the primary school years?
Yeah, the primary school years you can get a little bit more advanced. You know, kids are becoming a lot more advanced these days. But you know, it's really important for you to take them, and I suppose you can do a lot online, but you know, sit with them and open a bank account and explain what money money is and how it'll grow, and try and get a philosophy across to them about the difference between saving and investing, because that's a concept. You know, everyone says you must save money, but actually you need to invest money to get into a position where you're really making, you know, some good returns on your money. It's also an important point at that stage to introduce the concept of budgeting. So, you know, things like, you know, sending them to the tuck shop with 20 rand, I guess, and saying, right, you can buy anything you like, but remember that 20 rands, you know, you got to make sure that it lasts, you know. So they can't buy, you know, too much, because of course, you know, they'll run out of money. And then of course the schools are really good at entrepreneurship days, those kind of things. And one thing I found to be quite useful in the primary school years is set up a tuck shop at home. You know, it's quite a nice way of kind of playing shop, where they will work, you'll be able to pay them an income in hard sort of money. And then at the end of the day, they can come buy, you know, whatever they need to from the shop, you know, some sweets or a cold drink or whatever the case might be. And then they're feeling the transfer of money. So it really sets some good ground rules there.
And what about early teens? Is that not
Yeah, you know,
the
we.
period they just want to spend money on things like their friends have?
Yeah, you're exactly right, and those are our problem kids. That age is a difficult one with money, because as I've mentioned before, this generation is a very, you know, immediate gratification generation. So the moment they earn some money, kind of burns a hole in their pocket, and they want to spend it. But it's important at those early teens to encourage saving and investing. You know, trying to explain, you know, about the power of compounding interest, that they could look at, and you know, and start introducing them to things like, you know, contracts, you know, cell phone contracts. You know, what does that look like? You know, what are you paying for? You know, the fact that they don't really own their phone, they just, you know, that the service provider owns it until it's kind of been paid off, you know. And so, you know, really just taking the early teens with you to the shops and helping them understand what your purchasing decisions are. So if you're going to buy, for example, a bag of charcoal, okay, is a really sort of odd example. I mean, really go have a look and say, right, what are we buying? How much does it cost? Why is this one more than that one? Is that one 5 kilos? This one's 4 kilos. You know, kind of, you know, get them involved in in just being a little bit more aware. But early teens is always a problem, because you're right, they like to spend, and certainly at this stage they're really heading to electronic money, you know, bank cards, and e-wallets and things like that. So they've kind of lost that concrete operational, but they should still be in a position where they have some critical thinking about what they're doing.
And then, what do we teach older teens and young adults when we talk to them about money?
Yeah, so once they've turned the early teens corner, it's quite nice, because the late teens generally become a lot more responsible, and they start understanding about the money. And just keep in mind that when our children are exposed to good financial discussions, and they start managing their own money, they will go through times where they're spendthrifts, and they will go through times where they reckon, okay, I now need to start saving. So it's not a perfect science that you're always going to be a saver, or you're always going to spend your money. And this late teens, early childhood, early adulthood, sorry, is a great time for them to experiment, and to understand. Understand, look, yes, I spent all my money last month, but you know what? I'm saving up for that nice pair of shoes. I really need to focus on trying to save. So, you know, trying to teach them to save a percentage of their income, whether that's 20, 30, 40, you know, it'll really help when they see the power of compound interest over time. And helping them understand the real costs of living. So sit down with them and say, this is how much we spend on electricity, this is how much we spend on water. You know, another thing which comes into that discussion is tax. You know, late teens, early adults can start understanding that they're going to be taxed, and they need to understand, you know, what their net income would be, rather than saying, wow, I'm earning this great salary, but now actually, you know, the percentage of it that's gone. And really at that time as well, to do real world comparisons of, you know, investing versus savings. You know, quite a nice example to do there is to there's lots of platforms that you can invest on quite easily. And to take 100 rand and invest it, and take 100 rand and save it, and monitor that on a, you know, on a year to 2 year basis, and just see how each of them grow and how that money moves, because they will understand that by taking a degree of risk, they'll potentially get a better return than the cash that they're saving, but they then also start understanding volatility and how much risk they potentially want to take. And yeah, that'll touch the different kids in different ways. And important at that stage as well to talk about credit cards, debt management, and really, really important there is building a good credit score. You know, that is critical in our environment when we're dealing with young adults. They're not going to have enough cash to buy stuff, cash from the start in their lives, unless they've had the great wealth transfer and they end up with a massive amount of money. But in the main, if they're pretty much on their own, they will have to take out some debt. But it's about the management of that debt and how equipped they are about the knowledge of that debt. You know, for example, some of these banks will give you a loan, 100,000, 200,000 rand, at an interest rate of 22.5%. You know, wow, that sounds great. I can get this loan. But at the end of the day, that 22.5% just kills you. So it's really building up a good credit score, understanding what debt you're taking, and understanding the realization that that money needs to be paid back and some, especially on the higher side of the interest rate cycle. So those are really good conversations to have with early adults.
And
And
of
of
course,
course, lastly, yes, sorry, carry on.
you must lead by example. How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean that is critical. So you know, there's a lot of ways you can lead by example, from the 7-year-olds, you know, or preschool right up until teens, and that's by having good, positive, honest, wholesome conversations with your kids around a dining room table to say, this is the financial position, this is what it looks like, and it shouldn't be a negative one. It shouldn't be you always have to stop, you know, spending. We always have to, you know, you always, you know, putting the reins on. It can be, we're planning for a holiday. Let's try and build a pot of money for that holiday so that we can go and enjoy the holiday and they can spend that money on the holiday and get the gratification that way. So being a role model as a parent, and I mean, that's been quite difficult because a lot of the times, you know, us as parents, potentially, you know, that wealth transfer and conversation didn't happen with us. So we're kind of feeling our way in the dark as well. But it is critical to have good, open, positive conversations on an ongoing basis with your kids, teaching them the practicalities of money. It doesn't mean they have to want to study a BCom and become financially prudent, but it does open up good conversation for them to understand these intricacies of how to manage money.
Daryl, and what is the most important thing somebody ever told you about money?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I kind of went down the road of self-discovery. So for me, debt is a killer of savings and investments. So, you know, interest rate cycles come and go, and for many years we had lower interest rates, and then to have some debt is actually not a bad thing because it's relatively cheap. The problem with that debt is that once it turns, it does become very, very expensive. And if you've kind of hit your max at the lower interest rate cycle, a lower part of the interest rate cycle, and you've hit your max from a liquidity perspective, then when that interest rate cycle goes up, it puts massive amounts of pressure on one's financial planning. And then you've got to look at starting to cut things, which is never pleasant. So what I've always done is try watch the interest rate cycle quite carefully. I've also split, I've also been taught that you need to take some risk to get a good return on your money over time. And that's money that you need to put away and not look at for a period of time, 5 to 7 to 8 years. Because if you do look at it and you can't stomach the volatility, you know, before you know it, you'll be selling at the wrong time and realizing the losses in your portfolio. So really, at the end of the day, you know, I've been taught, hold on to your seat. If you are investing, it's not something you should look at all the time. Focus on your day-to-day budgeting, focusing on your day-to-day spend. Become positive about your financial discussions that you have with your family, and just help them along the way, and then transfer those skills, because us as parents need to do it for our kids. It's certainly not going to happen at schools.
Daryl, thank you so much for all this valuable information.
Only a pleasure, Ina. It was lovely chatting to you.